Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
Has told us that the things written aforetime were out for our learning. We can learn from events that are recorded for us in the pages of the Old Testament. We can learn from the people and their lives. The people of the Old Testament are not basically, fundamentally, any different than are we. They had good qualities. At times, there were those who had bad qualities. But some of them possessed qualities and characteristics that, folk, we would do well to exercise ourselves to develop and to be the kind of people that they were. And tonight for our study, I want us to concentrate upon three of whom we read, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, a study that is familiar to most of you because you've studied the Bible through the years. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were the Babylonian names that were given to three Hebrew people, three Hebrew children. Their Jewish name was Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, but we know them by their Babylonian names best, I'm sure. At the time that we read about them, they were in Babylonian captivity. Now today we studied some remarks that the Holy Spirit sent through Ezekiel, one of God's prophets, to the people of Israel when they were in captivity. We're talking about the Israelites in captivity even yet tonight. They had been taken there after the fall of Jerusalem, after the seizure of the last king of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar, when he conquered the land and carried the people away, he was particular in carrying away all of those whom he thought might be what we would call today important people, or people who were exceptionally skilled, or people who were talented, people that showed promise, people that he might be able to take and to train and to mold and utilize effectively even in his own country. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with Daniel, were among some of the young that were taken for this very purpose, selected to learn the Chaldean language, to be trained in special positions of leadership in the Chaldean government. Even in the days of their youth, they, like Daniel, had shown themselves to be good examples, because they, like Daniel, though they were subjected to being captives, did not disobey God in eating food that would have been a violation of the law of Moses for them to have eaten. And they, like Daniel, prospered nonetheless. And no doubt this was God's watch care over them. And finally, they were placed in various governmental affairs and positions over the whole province. Now we read about these three men, particularly in the book of Daniel and the third chapter. If you have your Old Testament, you may wish to turn there because we'll be reading several verses from the third chapter. In this third chapter, we read how Nebuchadnezzar built a golden image, an idol, that he called upon the people to worship. Now this, of course, was a bad thing. But you have to remember that Nebuchadnezzar was a heathen king. He did not worship the true God. And there was to be this monstrous time of dedication of this great image. And all of the people that were of any kind of importance or rank in the land were expected to be there. And there was to be this elaborate celebration. And inasmuch as Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were also governmental officials, they would expect or would be expected to be present at the dedication of this image. This is going to pose a problem for these three men. During this great feast of dedication, it was proposed by some of the advisors of Nebuchadnezzar that everybody in the kingdom would have to bow before this idol God. Now, those who believed in God could not do that because that would have been wrong. But this was the king's command. They were supposed to obey the king. But the king now had commanded something that would have made them violate and go against the teaching of God. And not only that, when the musical instruments would be sounded, when the time of day was designated, and everybody was supposed to bow before this great idol that Nebuchadnezzar had made, anybody that disobeyed and did not bow before this idol would be cast into a fiery furnace. I think we need to understand, for most of the people of the land, this posed no problem. They were idol worshippers of one sort or another. They wouldn't really care whether it was that golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had made or some other idol. They were willing to do that. And there had been times when the Jewish people themselves, even when they were in their homeland, had conformed to various forms of idolatry, but now they were in captivity. Now they were being punished because of their transgression from the ways of God. Now they were learning a renewed dedication to the will of God. And now they were being forced to do something that would have violated God's law. Now Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because of their relatively high positions in government, would naturally attract attention to themselves if they did not obey what the king told them to do. And there were those who were going to be constantly watching them, looking for something, trying to find some flaw, some accusation that they could make against them. And so if they chose to disobey and to defy the king's command, this would have been a very serious thing indeed. But the fact of the matter is, that's exactly what they decided they would do. They realized they could not bow before an idol. They realized they serve the only true God that there is, the God in heaven. They were not going to violate the will of God to obey any king or anybody that told them to disobey God. And so when the time, hour of worship or bowing before this idol came, they did not do it. And this was brought to the attention of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar was reminded, now you made a law. You made the idol. And you made the law that everybody is to bow down. Here is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they have violated your law. Now, I want us to notice rather closely the interview then that took place between Nebuchadnezzar on the one hand and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego on the other. In verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up?" I don't doubt, but Nebuchadnezzar wished he had not had this problem. He knew that these men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had been especially chosen because they were especially talented. He was getting great gain from them, benefit from them. He didn't want to have any problems with anybody that he had selected, especially. So he brings them in. He says, "Now, it's been told me that you wouldn't bow down, like I said everybody must. Is this true?" And it was, of course, true. But now I want you to notice what Nebuchadnezzar proposes. "Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all the kinds of music, if ye will fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye will not worship, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Doesn't that leave the impression, he says, "Now I've heard you disobeyed me, but I'm going to give you a second chance. Now this time, when the hour comes around and everybody bows before the idol, if you will just go ahead, go along with the crowd, and conform, and don't cause any waves, and just do whatever I say, why, everything will be all right. But now, if you don't, I really don't have a choice. I will have to inflict upon you the punishment that has been designated. So they were going to be watching. There would be people assigned to observe what these three men would or would not do. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, verse 16, answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. They're simply saying to the king, you won't have to wait until the next designated hour. We can tell you right now what we are going to do, and we will tell you why we're going to do what we're going to do. He said, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. It didn't make any difference how many other opportunities or how much leniency Nebuchadnezzar might exercise toward them. They had already made up their minds what they would do. They were going to do what was right. They would not do that which was in violation of the will of God to suit anybody. And so they just simply told Nebuchadnezzar that's the way it was going to be. They didn't have to wait to see what their answer was. They told Nebuchadnezzar what their plans and intentions would be. Now I suggest to you, dear listener, their statement was a very bold proclamation. It took a lot of courage on their part, a lot of faith on their part in God to take that kind of stand. They realized, and I think this is an important part of this entire account for us to learn, they realized their lives were at stake. But they realized something else. They realized their loyalty to God was at stake. Sometimes we think in the midst of persecution, people realize their life or their property or their gain or their popularity or something might be at stake. It's a whole lot more at stake than that. This was a test of their loyalty to God. So at that point, the king ordered that the law be enforced and the punishment carried out, and that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would be cast into the fiery furnace. Now, a very peculiar thing Nebuchadnezzar does here. He ordered that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual. We're not really told why he did that. We are told that the response of these three men made him furious. And it might have been a way of him venting some of his wrath and anger. It may well have been that he was going to do everything within his power to make sure that nobody's God anywhere was going to be able to deliver these three men as they had suggested God might well do. I want you to notice, God had not promised Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that they would be delivered. But the consequences of being loyal to God was not what concerned these three men. Whether it would be well with them or whether it would cost their life, that had no bearing on their decision. Sometimes people make right decisions if it looks like it's going to be beneficial to them. And they'll make wrong decisions if it looks like it won't advance what they might want to advance. They didn't even look beyond what the result of their decision might be. Their first concern was, brethren, we will make the right decision, and the consequences can fall whichever way they might. And that's something that we need to observe in them. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were bound up. The furnace was heated 7 times hotter than usual. So hot that even the men that took these 3 men to throw them into the furnace, they themselves died because of the heat of it. Now, I am not sure as to the structure of this furnace. You see, suggested pictures of it in Bible dictionaries and so forth. And archaeologists have found certain things that might suggest that it could have been somewhat of a structure into which one who stood off at a distance could look into and could see what was going on in that furnace. You know, that must have been a very gruesome sight for anybody. I dare say that none of us would choose to want to observe human beings being cast in such a place as that. But whatever that be the case, Nebuchadnezzar could see inside that furnace. And he expected, of course, for them to die as others, no doubt, had died in that furnace. But this time it was different. This time when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace, he was astonished. He didn't see the men burning up. He saw them walking around in that furnace. And not only that, he saw another walking around in that furnace in addition to the 3 he had put in there. In verse 24 we read, "Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said to his counselors, Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said unto the king, True, O king. And he answered and said, Lo, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God." Just exactly who this 4th may have been has been the subject of a lot of discussion and speculation on the part of people, and it's interesting to think about it. Many have thought that this was an angel from heaven that God had sent in order to preserve these 3 men and to be with them in this ordeal. Some have even suggested that it might have been the one who was the second person of the Godhead, who later took on the form of flesh when he was born of the Virgin Mary. We don't know that it was the second person of the Godhead. We're not told if it was a specific angel or who that angel might have been, and that is really speculation and is of no real consequence, except for the fact here was evidence that Nebuchadnezzar could see that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a deliverer and a protector in that furnace with them. And whoever it might have been, along with the fact that these 3 men did not perish, startled Nebuchadnezzar, as I think we would expect it to do. And so he ordered that these men be brought out of the furnace. It's amazing. In spite of the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than usual, when these 3 men came out, their clothes didn't even have the smell of smoke about them. So complete was their deliverance. Well, you say, well, that's a miracle. Certainly it was a miracle. Certainly it was supernatural. And people who believe in God have no problems with the miraculous. Friend, if one believes that there is God, like the Bible describes God, he has no problem believing in God's power to do the miraculous. We do not believe that miracles are being performed today because God's book tells us of the cessation of the performance of miracles when the purpose of miracles was accomplished. But that very same book does tell us of many miracles that have transpired and took place, historical, accurate records of things that actually did occur. And we believe every single miraculous event that is recorded for us in the pages of the Bible to be just exactly as the Bible has so stated. And God performed a miracle here in the deliverance of these three men. Now when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were brought out, there was a complete reversal, a complete change in the attitude of Nebuchadnezzar. Rather than throwing anybody else into the fiery furnace for not bowing down to his idol, he issued a decree that there would be punishment to anybody that said anything of a derogatory nature of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So he was obviously very favorably impressed with what had transpired. Now, brethren, as we noted as we started our study, these things were written for our learning. This is not simply to tell us a story, though it's historically accurate. This was not simply to show the great events that took place in time past. These are to show us certain things about God and certain qualities that you and I would do well to develop in our own lives. Now, we would hope that we would never be faced with a physical situation of being cast into the fiery furnace. But let us look at some of the qualities of their life and a deliverance that's far more important than being physically delivered from such a state in which they found themselves. First, I want us to see the majesty of the power of God, the providence of God, God's care for people who are loyal and faithful unto Him, and certainly the credit and the glory for this marvelous deliverance belongs to God. But I want to mention three qualities that these men exhibited. There are others, but we'll just mention three that we must have. First, I suppose the most noticeable is their faith in God and His power to deliver. Now you will take note, when they were told to bow down before this idol, God did not come and tell them, don't do it. They already knew not to do it. God didn't come and tell them, I will deliver you. Now, they could know that God had delivered His people many other times. He delivered David from Goliath. He had delivered the Israelites from Pharaoh at the Red Sea. There are many other instances when God delivered His people, like the time of Samuel, when God delivered Israel from the Philistines. Many instances that we read about God's deliverance, they could have known all about that. But they didn't have any specific promise from God that He would deliver them from this fate. But they knew, as we sometimes sing, He is able to deliver thee. And friend, there is something from which we must be delivered, and that is from the fires of hell. We must be delivered from the wages of sin. And we have the God of heaven, the only true and living God, whom we serve and whose children we are, and we can have full confidence God is able to deliver us. Regardless of what might come upon us in our loyalty and faith to God, we can know that. This is taught in this instance here. Christ taught His apostles when they were, or His disciples when He was teaching them to pray, that they might be delivered from the evil one. And God told the Christians in Colossae, and those people were no different than the Christians at East End, that they had been delivered out of the power of darkness, translated into the kingdom of His dear Son. So noticeably in their character was their faith and confidence and trust in God, who was able to deliver them from that which otherwise would have destroyed them. And God still delivers. He doesn't promise us physical deliverance, and He didn't always deliver everybody physically. But God can, will, and does deliver us from the onslaughts of sin. In addition to their faith, we have to admire their courage and their conviction. As I have already mentioned, their life was in the balance, yes. But their soul, their spirit was also in the balance. And they realized that, and therefore they spoke firmly. They spoke courageously of their convictions. They were not hesitant to expand their intentions. Listen, brethren, being loyal to God meant more to them than life itself. I think we should allow that to sink deep into our hearts. Being loyal to God should mean more to us than anybody or anything. Even life itself. Doubtless many people under the same kind of circumstances would have been tempted to compromise or even deny God and disobey God and save their own lives. We read of the history of the early church, particularly when pagan Rome was turned against the early church. Many people who professed their faith in Christ chose to die in the arena, even by wild animals and savages and others, rather than to deny their faith and loyalty to God, because they had the courage in the realization that being loyal to God is the most important thing of our existence. We need to develop that quality. We need to teach that quality to those that follow after. And then the third thing that we see about them that I mentioned tonight, we see their faith, their courage, their conviction, what a powerful influence for good that was on others. Here in this instance, even a tremendous influence on Nebuchadnezzar. And brethren, we need to learn that when we are of the disposition to compromise what is right, nobody's going to think well of you. Not even your enemies will think well of you. They know that you have a price and that you can be bought. They know that they just keep up the pressure, there'll be a breaking point when you will give in what you say you stand for and believe. On the other hand, when you stand firmly, courageously, faithfully, solidly for the convictions that you've learned from the Word of God, you will encourage others to do the same thing to their salvation. And more than likely, you'll even have greater respect in the eyes of those who are your enemies. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego caused this heathen king to now have respect for God. And that's the same kind of thing that Christ taught us to do, to let our light so shine that others may see our good works and glorify the Father which is in heaven. And how tragic it is, especially when those of us who profess to be Christians will allow our conduct and behavior to bring reproach on the name of our God. Rather than bowing to the evil idols all around us, we ought to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and stand firm. This is a marvelous Old Testament story. It's a thrilling story. It's a motivating story. It's a story that should provoke us to reach a higher level of commitment and spirituality in our own lives. Even children know this story. And we all need to know it and know the principles that are taught. Note then their faith, their courage, their marvelous power of good example. Let us take heed to their manner of life, imitate it, and make it a part of our own character. The lesson is yours for tonight. We would encourage you to follow in the footsteps of Christ. We would encourage you to allow God to deliver you from that which is the worst destruction that one can face, and that spiritual separation from God because of his self-imposed alienation due to sin. God is able to deliver. He has provided the deliverer, which is his Son. He's left it up to us to make the decision what we shall do about our deliverance. He makes it so plain, but he makes it so easy and so accessible to us is salvation. Believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Repent of sins. Confess your faith and obey him in baptism. And then live a life in the imitation of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego of faith, courage, and a good example. If you would come, we invite you to do so as